Work can wait. It's time to talk sports with Jeff Blair. I got another confession to make.
I'm your fool. It really was a no-win situation for the Toronto Maple Leafs last night. I mean, if you lose to the Buffalo Sabres, all hell's going to break loose. And if you win, the initial reaction is going to be, well, it's against the Sabres. They're supposed to win. But as bad as the Sabres are, sweet Jesus, Sabres are a bad hockey team. It's tough to take anything away from the Leafs after that 4-0 win. I mean, they dominated Buffalo, and Randy Carlyle's line juggling paid off handsomely in terms of possession and opportunity. Now, Phil Kessel, Tyler Bozak, James Van Riemsdyk, they did take advantage of time together in the power play. But from the very first shift, that reworked first line, that reworked second line, that reworked third line, from the very first shift, they had the Sabres in the back heel. And every forward and every defender was engaged. What about Jake Gardner? I mean, guys booed and cheered on the same play. Holds onto the puck, goes around Michael Neuwirth, finally stuffs it past him on the wraparound. That Jake Gardner is your life as a Leaf. Only you could be booed and cheered on the same play. Well, at 10 shots against, I don't care if you're playing a peewee team. 10 shots against is pretty special. I mean, you'd expect an NHL team to fluke out 10 shots just by accident. So let's see what happens now with back-to-back games against Columbus and Chicago. But for one night at least, major moves were made by the Leafs coaching staff, and the players responded. Isn't that what it's all about in the here and now? So it is a morning to give credit where credit is due. And that kind of feels good. This team isn't as good as the Detroit Red Wings or Boston Bruins, but it's not as bad as the Sabres. And that's kind of where we thought they'd be.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
We will, of course, pass along any updates on the status of Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe, who is resting at home in Texas after a severe stroke. Cliff Floyd and James Johnson will join us later to talk Game 7 of the World Series and the opening of the Raptors' regular season tonight against the Atlanta Hawks. But first, your Toronto Maple Leafs, Mr. Mark Osborne. They beat the Sabres 4-0 at the ACC. And while it's hard to say the line juggling was directly responsible for the goals, the Leafs did have, well, they had the Sabres on the heel from the back start. And we're going to ask you the same question that we're going to ask the fans at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Mark, did you like the new look lines?
Okay, they were okay. Anytime you get a result like you did last night, and sometimes that's what it takes to get a team out of its funk, because we know that Randy Carlyle for, you know, the last better part of 2 years has really kept the Bozak, Van Riemsdyk, Kessel line intact. And even when Phil Kessel was asked the question in his presser after the game, how long do you anticipate this staying the same? And he kind of chuckled and said, things do change. And I would anticipate eventually that it goes back to where it once was. And yet I think the quandary that Randy does have is trying to find somebody to play with, Lupul and Kadri. And I thought both Kadri and Lupul, having Kessel on that side, they were both as energized as I've seen them, especially Joffrey Lupul. You know, 7 shots through 2 periods, a lot of good scoring chances. And I've honestly never saw Nazem Kadri being as creative and mm-hmm. making things happen as he did last night.
Well, further to your point about Joffrey Lupul, I mean, I don't pretend to understand all the intricacies of the new analytics, but the one thing that does appear to make a lot of sense to me is if you can increase the amount of time your best offensive players have the puck, you have to have confidence that at some point they'll start going in. You know, you have to have confidence that the guy's track record, at some point those goals will go in. And the one thing I saw, and people are going to say, well, 7 shots, no goals. The one thing I saw from Joffrey Lupul, and maybe you saw the same thing, he seemed to be more, if it's possible to be more aggressive with your shots, he was more aggressive with his shots. He wasn't waiting that little extra split second. The puck was on his stick, and he was letting it go.
Well, one thing that you can tell from a player, and you know, you might be correct in that respect, is that when you, and it's that just little bit of extra of knowing full well, and I could just tell immediately that, you know, he was just engaged, he was determined, and you know, when you put a guy like Phil Kessel on the right side, and you go back before the James Van Riemsdyk, you know, trade, it was Bozak, Lupul, and Kessel. And, you know, Joffrey Lupul was having probably his best season until he got hurt. And so, yeah, for the good of the team, you know, that Joffrey has been, you know, playing on that second line. And so for him now to have another option, another winger that you know is going to create space and is going to be offensively really aware of various situations, I mean, that's going to give Joffrey Lupul a lot more space. And I can only equate it to maybe being on a scoring line myself at one time. Like if I was to play with Olchek and Lehman and knowing that there was chemistry there and I was producing or whatever, and then there comes the reason where the coach says, well, you know what, we got to break up this combination, and I've got to now play with Vincent Damfus and Daniel Marois. Now, both good scorers and, and all that stuff, but when chemistry is not there, you just don't really feel that you're on top of your game, no matter how much you try. And, yeah, it might be a temporary thing, Jeff, but, you know, it was certainly nice to see the team bounce back. Joffrey has always been a stand-up guy in the press conference. He's well-spoken, and he's not afraid to just step right out and say something. And it was really actually nice that the team responded, and Joffrey did as well.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, we're joined by Mark Osborne, co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game. The other thing we saw, too, that was, you know, something I think we need to keep in mind when we talk about this, is they are going to see time together in the power play. So even if the lines do stay broken up, it's not as if they're never, ever, ever going to be together again.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, watching that at periods of time last night, you know, that did happen. He went back to the well, and yet, you know, there was, you know, a couple of times where it changed around a little bit. And one of the things I did notice, especially on the power play, and they had been in a, you know, 0-for-23 drought until Bozak scores late in that second period, you saw Cody Franson with Jake Gartner. That was, you know, Cody and Jake and Dion, you know, watching, which when's the last time you saw the start of a power play for any amount of time, Dion sitting on the bench watching? That was a real interesting thing for me to observe. And then, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, Jake Gardner scores a goal as well, that's a real positive. And yet, sometimes I look at this and say, okay, well wait a minute. It's the Buffalo Sabres. I think we saw a real indication of, oh boy, what a long year it's going to be in Buffalo. And no matter what Ted Nolan has up his sleeve as far as the motivating speech or trying to get the best out of his players, it's going to be a long year in Buffalo. And let's see how the Leafs continue this with, you know, going into Columbus, which they've been good on the road, the Leafs have been, and then the real test will be Saturday night when the Blackhawks come and visit.
When you look at the Sabres, Mark, and Doug McLean was talking about this, you look at the Sabres, you look at the veterans that they've added to that team, and I've got to tell you, I mean, it was hard to notice anybody in the Sabres last night, but there were a couple of those veteran players that, I mean, the only time I noticed Gionta is when he was standing in the crease at one point in front of Jonathan Bernier. That team, you hate to say it's the worst team you've ever seen because that's hyperbole. And, I mean, you know, I saw some pretty bad NHL teams in Winnipeg and a couple of other places I've been as well. But, you know, I'm looking at that team, I'm trying to figure out, to be blunt, I'm trying to figure out what those veterans bring to the team. Like, I don't understand why a guy like Josh Georges would want to go to Buffalo and not want to come here or not want to go to another team. I just
Yeah, you know,
it's inexplicable.
That's really one of those ones where you go, you know, wow, because I know we talked about it yesterday in postgame with Chris Johnson about that whole, man, it seemed like he got off the hook here with, there was a couple of articles, even another article this morning about, you know, that exact same thing that Cody Franchin was mentioning in those rumors for Josh Georges. And, you know, Georges has said, well, he, you know, his heart was just not in coming to Toronto, and whether he just, you know, didn't want to come and, you know, play with Dion Phaneuf or whatever that issue was. But, well, how much fun are you going to have this year playing there in Buffalo? And then, you know, you mentioned Brian Gionta. He's a Syracuse boy, so he's close to Buffalo.
True.
So it's almost like going home. And yet you got to wonder, a guy who's, you know, been a valiant warrior for his career, you know, undersized, is it, you know, coming to the end for Brian Gionta? You know, you look up the middle, there's Cody Hodgson, and, you know, the goaltenders have played pretty well, but there's no Ryan Miller, and it's like, man, they do have a stockload of draft picks, and, you know, that Sam Reinhardt kid played last night, he should be in junior. There's just a lot of things not to like about the Sabres at this present time.
Mark, what do you need to see out of the Leafs in that game against Columbus that'll tell you that this isn't more than just, you know, a bad Buffalo team coming into Toronto at the end of a West Coast road trip?
Well, you know what, one of the things that I think Randy has, you know, obviously mentioned would be, you know, certainly the sense of urgency and moving their feet, which they did yesterday. I think some of the little details of the game was there, as far as just being the gaps were closer. There wasn't a lot of turnovers. You know, I thought they just really played a good structural type of game, and I think obviously, you know, their feet were moving, and they created a bunch of stuff simply by moving their feet. Now, you know, again, I say that it's always interesting, and I watch a lot of teams when you have the bottom feeders coming into your building, oftentimes that I know it's been historically not very good for the Maple Leafs to lay an egg, but, you know, why don't we just give them credit that mm-hmm. that was a real positive, that after the closed door meeting, they actually did respond, you know, in such a way that it was, you know, again, a pleasant relief that they went to work. You know, they had Sunday off. They had a pretty engaged practice on Monday. I've seen a lot of engaged practices that were left at the practice.
And right.
A lot of stuff just did not, you know, go right from the get-go. They emotionally and mentally, it's so much a mental part of the game that that's what they really have to do, is just believe in themselves and play that good structural game that they did last night. And, you know, hopefully they go into Columbus, where Columbus has struggled a bit at home. That's a positive thing as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I made the point in my intro that there's a tendency to always look big picture and to look beyond what happened 24 hours before. But here's what I took away from this. Wasn't a very good opponent they were playing, but the coaches made changes. The coaches hit the reset button, I think, as Steve Spott said. The players came out. They responded. They held an opponent to 10 shots. They won a game,
yeah.
And they got a shutout. I mean, I look at it at that, and you know what? We can argue whether or not Joffrey Lupul's still holding his stick too tight, or, you know, or Nazem Kadri's still squeezing the stick, whatever. Fact of the matter is, a shutout win over a bad team, held them to 10 shots. The changes that the coaches made, at least there was some sort of positive momentum to take from it. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you know what? Take the fact is, there's only six defense. You're only playing with one extra guy on your roster, and that's, you know, Carter Ashton is the only extra guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the whole, you know, team to understand that, hey, boys, here's our team, here's our four lines, here's our 60, here's who's playing in net. It's now on you guys to just do it. Don't, for whatever reason, if you call this team, you know, mentally fragile for, you know, the fact is that they can't play, or they get comfortable for whatever reason, or they're nervous because, oh boy, if I don't play well, I'm gonna sit, or Jake Gardner. That's done at least for one game, and I would anticipate Reimer in net against Columbus, and then you'll go back with Bernier against the Blackhawks. That's going to be the real test.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so far so good. They'll practice there today and on their way to Columbus tomorrow, and hopefully they certainly do feel better about themselves and so do the rest of us.
Mark, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Jeff, take care.
Take care. That is Mark Osborne. He's co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game and Hockey Nation on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can follow him on Twitter at MarkOsborne21. Steve Spott is the assistant coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's going to join us momentarily. We'll talk to him about the team finally getting off the schneid when it comes to the power play. But for one night at least, we saw the line juggling appear to work. And I want to take your calls at 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. You can weigh in on the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. My Twitter handle is SNJeffBlair. Just to let you know what we have coming up in the show at 10 o'clock, Cliff Floyd from the MLB Network will join us. We'll talk about Game 7 of this World Series. The Kansas City Royals absolutely laying waste to the San Francisco Giants last night. Barry Davis will join us as well. He is in Kansas City covering the World Series for Sportsnet. Matt Devlin of the Raptors, he is their TV play-by-play voice. He'll join us at 10:40. Raps and Atlanta Hawks get their season going tonight. Cannot mention enough just how much I'm looking forward to this Raptors season. I think a lot of sports fans in the city are looking forward to the Raptors season. They get a start against the Atlanta Hawks. 11 o'clock, John Paul Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports. He'll join us at 11:15, James Johnson of those aforementioned Toronto Raptors, and we'll take your calls and give you a chance to tell us where you think the Raptors will finish this year. And as I said earlier, we are monitoring the situation with Gordie Howe. You know by now that he is at home with his family in Texas. Got to admit, I didn't even know Gordie Howe lived in Texas. He's at home with his family in Texas after suffering a severe stroke Sunday, and limited movement on the right side of his body. But, you know, as I said, he's home with his family, and we'll keep you abreast of that. We'll keep you informed. Anything that happens, you will hear it here first on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, have to feel pretty good about themselves. Again, I made the point. I don't care who the opponent is. I like it when a coaching staff makes changes and a team wins and plays better. That, to me, that's what coaching is all about. You make a move and you try to affect change. You can't make a trade after every game. You can't make a trade after every two-game losing streak. You've got to use what you have, try to find the pieces that fit together and the pieces that work. And for one night at least, again, regardless of the opponent, for one night at least, the Leafs seem to have hit on almost all cylinders last night. Steve Spott is the assistant coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Steve Spott joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Steve, thanks so much for doing this. What goes through a coach's mind or coach's minds after a game like that when, you know, you made some moves as far as line juggling goes? You had, as Mark Osborne pointed out, on the power play, you had Cody Franson and Jake Gardner. You made some subtle moves, and whether or not all those moves directly led to goals, you pretty much dominated the game. What goes through your mind afterwards? Is there a sense of satisfaction, or is it almost you immediately start looking ahead to the next game?
Well, you know, Jeff, it's a good question. I think last night, you know, we do a game review after every game and, you know, look at the positives and obviously the areas you want to improve in. But, no, it was nice last night. I thought, you know, we were able to get a four-line contribution last night. And, you know, the small adjustment that we made with Nazem Kadri, I thought was real good too. So, you know, some of the adjustments we made worked out, as you said, on the power play and whatnot. But now it's about looking forward to Columbus.
Steve, what? Tell us how a coaching staff goes about deciding to make some of those moves. And what I mean by that is, you know, I don't think it's not a matter of guys sitting around saying, well, let's try this. Let's see if this works. There has to be some sort of a step-by-step or a logical approach to saying, okay, we're going to take Phil Kessel, we're going to put him with this guy, we're going to take Clarkson, we're going to put him up here. Kind of walk us through how that comes about. Is there a lot of debate in it among the staff in that, or is it, you know, Randy kind of says, oh, what the hell, let's try this?
No, there's a lot of debate. I think, you know, one thing, you've got Pete Horacek, myself, and Randy, three guys that have been head coaches, or obviously Randy is a head coach. So, you know, no one's afraid to give some input. And obviously, you know, when we had our tough game against Boston, you know, you sit down and you look at the possible changes. And, you know, when we keep JVR, Bozak, and Phil together, you know, it does allow the other team, you know, to play a checking line against them if they get the correct matchup and play their top two defensemen at them. And, you know, then you're relying, obviously, on Joffrey Lupul and Nazem Kadri to apply some secondary scoring. We had Danny Winnick on that line. So, you know, looking for ways to distribute the offense. Although Naz didn't score last night and Loops didn't score, I thought those two guys played a heck of a game with Phil on the right wing. And that's what we have to do. We've got to find ways to manufacture offense through the depth of our lineup, not just on the one line. So, you know, I thought we played well last night. I'd like, if anything, Jeff, I thought our puck management was good. And coming into this team this year as a first-time coach, as Pete Horchek is as well, you know, that's the challenge for this group is managing the puck through the neutral zone. And when we get the puck in behind the other teams, we can have success because we do have skill. But our puck management obviously was much better last night and led to, I think, our 2 points.
How much of that comes from the fact that when you put Phil with Lupul and with Kadri, Phil's capable of assisting on goals as much as he is in scoring. We saw that last night. But it seems as if in some ways when you put Phil there, it almost seems to quicken. As quick as Kadri and Lupul can be, Steve, I almost got the impression that line was even quicker with Phil Kessel out there. In terms of its decision-making, they seem to be looking for each other a lot more, if that makes sense. At least from the press box, that's what it looked like.
No, you're right. I think it's interesting. I think if we're playing an immense league game and we put Phil Kessel on your right wing, it's going to force you to play better just because
sure.
It's Phil Kessel. And for Naz, it's no different. And for Joffrey, it's no different. You know, when they saw the change, you know, there's an obligation now to elevate your game because you're playing with arguably one of the best scorers in the National Hockey League. So it does. It was a shot of inspiration, I think, for Naz and for Loops. And although, as I said, those two guys didn't get on the board with goals, I thought they played great. And they definitely did elevate their speed and their pace of the game. So hopefully that'll continue to work out. And I've had time with David Clarkson. And David Clarkson's had a very good year so far to start. And I think playing him with Bozak and JVR, I thought that line was solid for us as well. So, you know, we'll continue to move in that direction. But, you know, nothing is set in stone in this league, as you well know. It's about tinkering. It's finding ways to create offense every night, not giving up your defense. But I thought last night was definitely at least a positive and a step in the right direction.
The other thing, Steve, that was noticeable is that it was a good structural game for the Leafs. There was a shift early in the first period. I mean, I made a note of it, and I know that a couple of the Sabres broadcasters talked about it as well. There was a shift in the first period. They broke it down where you had four guys in the neutral zone. It was almost it wasn't a perfect box. It was almost offline a little bit, but there was no room. There was nothing for the Sabres to do. There was absolutely no way to go. And I was thinking to myself as I'm watching that game, it's got to be pretty hard to play a good structural game when you're just heavily outshooting the other opponent, because there's got to be that human nature kicking in that says, you know, maybe I can cheat a little bit here.
Well, part of the buy-in for us is to make sure that the players understand, especially when you have a skilled team like we do have, the importance of defending when you don't have the puck to get it back. And our neutral zone is the win zone. We say that all the time. And if you can control the neutral zone, you'll have success 9 times out of 10. And last night, you're right. The structure is a word around here that has got to be used more. It's got to be used more with our F3, our high man in the offensive zone, in the neutral zone, and defensively. You know, when we're back in our end, that we're not running around, that we're getting guys up against the wall. But our neutral zone last night was probably the tightest it's been to date, and mm-hmm. It's an area that we have to continue to focus on. And if this team will buy in and continue to play with structure, and that's our job, is to sell that, you know, we're going to be a tough team to beat because we can score. And it's nice coming to the rink every day knowing you can score. I think that's a great thing to have as a coach. The challenge for us is to get the buy-in to play defensively when we don't have the puck. And last night was definitely, as I said, a step in the right direction. But it's a work in progress, and we've got to continue to sell it.
Gardner and Franzen and the power play seem to work well. Was that just a matter of changing things up a little bit, or was it just that maybe it was that particular power play I noticed it, to be honest?
No, it was a change. You know what, again, we're tilting the ice, but we haven't been rewarded with goals, but we've tilted the ice. And, you know, I heard an interesting stat, you know, a power play, you know, is is not going to work 75% of the time. But if it works 25% of the time, you're in good shape. So, you know, the key for it when you don't score is to tilt the ice and to get momentum. And I thought we've done a pretty good job. But like our 5-on-5 game, you know, we wanted to make sure that our power play maybe was changed up a little bit. And so we changed the personnel, and we'll see how it continues to work. But, again, it was just trying to find some combinations. You're getting to that 10-game mark now, and you want to find different combinations. So it's just something that we've tinkered with.
What about Jake Gardner's skill set would make him useful on the power play? And I think I mean by that. Yeah. I assume, honestly, I associate guys on the blue line and the power play guys from the point as guys with big shots, or, you know, maybe a forward, a guy like Ovechkin or a guy like Kessel. But what can Jake bring to the power play?
The hardest thing, and I found it coming out of junior in the American Hockey League, the hardest thing at this level is getting the puck in the zone. It really is. Teams are so good at defending their blue line that, you know, even on a power play breakout, there are times you have to dump it in and earn that puck back because teams stand up and they gap up so well. The one thing Jake Gardner can do is skate the puck up the ice. He can transport the puck from our end to the offensive zone and get us set up if there's not a passing option. So that's the first thing. The second thing in the zone, as we all know, is passing is elite, one of the top passers, I believe, in the league. The challenge for Jake is to be a little bit more selfish in a positive way, where he's willing to shoot the puck when he has an opportunity to get to the net with the likes of a JVR standing at the net. So he can transport the puck. That's his greatest attribute. He can pass the puck. Now the challenge for us is to get him to shoot the puck when he has it in his wheelhouse.
Steve, it was good to join us this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. That is Steve Spott. He is the assistant coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs, responsible for the power play. And Jake Gardner, take advantage of some time in the power play last night alongside Cody Franson. And there was a little more, seemed to be a little more movement. Now, granted, they had a lot of power plays in the row. In a row, Buffalo was, in addition to being bad, they were very, very undisciplined. And I've got to think that Ted Nolan's got to be pulling his hair out right now trying to figure out what to make of that team, because as Mark Osborne said, that's got the makings of a long, long season ahead for the Buffalo Sabres. 416, having said that, I still think Carolina gets Connor McDavid. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. And my Twitter handle is SNJeffBlair. And we asked the question. I mean, those line changes, and I think it's interesting that Steve Spott kind of referred to it, kind of went out of his way to minimize the line changes, to paint them as a little less dramatic as a lot of us made them seem, which is understandable if you're an assistant coach or any coach. I mean, you want to take the drama out of the situation. But we're asking the question this morning, did you like what you saw from those lines? Is it maybe something the Leafs can stick with going forward? Kessel, Kadri, and Lupul in particular, I think that's where a lot of the attention would focus on. There was a lot going on when they were out in the ice. Lupul and Kadri still can't buy a goal, but there was a lot going on when they were out on the ice. And they did have the Sabres from their first shift. They had the Sabres on their back heel, and the Sabres were not able to handle their speed and not able to handle their quickness. So, again, all you can do is go on the stuff you have at hand, right? And whatever was done worked last night. Doesn't mean it's going to work against Columbus. Doesn't mean it's going to work against Chicago. But for one night, it worked. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. Let's go to the phone lines. I know. Why don't we go to...
Hey, Jeff, it's time for the Dangle Dial.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Doing well. I was really pleased with what I saw.
I don't know how I feel about this one. I feel weird.
Well, I was
no,
really...
Okay. They lose to the Bruins, and it's all chaos and anarchy, and we want them to trade the coach and the goalies and the refs and everybody. And then they get this win against Buffalo, and I should treat it like a gift, a glorious gift. But I kind of feel bad. It was like the Leafs beat a peewee team. Do you actually get 2 points in the standings if you beat the Buffalo Sabres?
The last time I looked...
No kidding, oh. Eh?
Yeah,
wow.
Really.
That kind of feels like cheating, doesn't it?
Well, not really.
I felt a little bad when, okay, Kessel scores a goal. He's not even in front of the net, banks it off Michael Neuwirth, and then Neuwirth refused to look at the puck as if that would make the goal not count. But you know what the most amazing part is?
What?
The Leafs didn't set a new franchise record for the least amount of shots they faced.
Now,
wait
a minute.
Everyone was ranting last night, oh, it's a new record. No. They tied the record. January 5th, 2002, Leafs versus Ottawa Senators. The Leafs won 3-1. That's the amazing part. The Leafs actually allowed a goal that game. Mike Fisher was the lone goal scorer for the Ottawa Senators. Curtis Joseph stopped 9 of 10 shots. Bernier stopped 10 of 10. Therefore, Jonathan Bernier is better than Curtis Joseph. Don't you agree, Jeff?
Jonathan Bernier
is better than Curtis Joseph.
I will hang up and listen to your reaction.
I did not say that.
Did I say that Jonathan Bernier was better than Curtis Joseph? I didn't say that. Steve Dangle, ladies and gentlemen, you can get more from Steve Dangle on sportsnet.ca. I believe he's got an item up right now in great NHL rivalries. And I guess he's going to be a regular caller. It's going to be like Eddie in Fort Erie or Clifton in Etobicoke. Steve from Mars, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Continue our Maple Leafs discussion. One night. I know it was one night and it was the Buffalo Sabres. Big grain of salt here. But did you like what you saw out of the new lines? And do you think that maybe there's something there the Leafs can build around going forward? This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. And you can join the conversation on social media. Use the hashtag Blair Show. So we discussed the Leafs 4-0 win over the Buffalo Sabres and those new line combinations, or in some cases, reworked line combinations. I don't know exactly how new they were. For one night at least, they appeared to work. The question I'm asking you is, did you see enough to think that they might work going forward? To me, it's going to come down to, can David Clarkson keep up with JVR and with Tyler Bozak? And if he can, then it's got a shot at working. To me, this move is about two guys. It's mostly about Nazem Kadri. As I've said, trying to find somebody who can play with him, trying to put Nazem Kadri in a position where his skill set, and it does exist, can be best utilized to help the team win. But I think you also, as part of this, you need David Clarkson to uphold his part of the bargain. You've got to remember that this is a team that is playing and has played all year without David Booth, who, for better or worse, was expected to be on that second line. Frank and Hamilton, you're on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, did you like these new line combinations? Do you think there might be a long-term answer there?
First of all, Jesse, I got a couple points for you, and then I'll hang up, listen to your response if you could.
Okay.
Buffalo, though, right? They played the Buffalo Sabres. The one thing, I'm a longtime Leaf fan. I don't like this team. I don't like the way that they play. I don't like the personnel that they have.
Okay.
That being said, these guys still, even last night, were making backhand, behind-the-back passes, into the slot, line passes all over the place. And when they play good teams, they're going to get dented by it. They have to get back to that hockey that, you know, dump the puck in once in a while, get on the puck. Every time they seem to put the puck in behind the defenseman, they were on the puck, locking the wall, getting their plays. Until they do that, the flash and dance, it eventually will come back to bite them, especially late in the season. Everybody tightens up. Second point, listening to Steve Spott, I'm not on a Randy Carlyle, let's get rid of Randy Carlyle, but this guy seems pretty legit. He knows what's going on. He seems to have respect to his players. He's done nothing but win everywhere he's been, and maybe down the line, this guy's got the opportunity to be some sort of a head coach.
It's interesting. Thanks for the call. It's interesting that you said that. I spoke to somebody last night for an article I'm doing for Sportsnet.ca, and part of the conversation, we just started kind of shooting the crap, as often happens. Part of the conversation was about the coaches, and both Peter Horacek and Steve Spott are guys with a pedigree that suggests they can at some point be a head coach. Peter Horacek already was a head coach, and it didn't work out. The thing you never know, and I've seen this in particular with baseball, because I spent more time around baseball managers and coaches than I have around head coaches of hockey teams. The thing you never know is how a person will adapt to going from being one of the voices to the voice. You know, there are a lot of coaches, a lot of great coaches. And I'll throw an example out. Brian Butterfield. Has there ever been a coach, a Blue Jays coach, that has gotten as much love as Brian Butterfield? I could bring 5 major league general managers into this room and say to them, point blank, could Brian Butterfield ever manage? And they'd go, no. It's one thing to be a great coach. It's one thing to be a guy who can be the positive voice in a player's ear. It's another thing to be the guy who has to look at a guy and say, you suck. I'm sitting your ass down. You're going to the press box. Get it together. You're pulling us down. I can't afford this from you. Big difference. And it's not just in terms of being able to impart negative news to somebody. It's being able to follow up on it and it being able to hold firm and being able to do it in a way that instructs and, frankly, it sometimes also punishes. And there's a, you know, coaches there's a myth created around assistant coaches and coaches in baseball in particular. It seems to be football maybe to a certain degree. That because this guy, you know, sounds good, looks good, seems to know what he's talking about. Of course he knows what he's talking about. He wouldn't have the job if he didn't. And I'm not saying this specifically about Steve Spott, but all I'm saying is it's one thing to be able to, especially when you're dealing with professional athletes at the highest level, it's one thing to be able to pull a guy aside and say, we got to work on this. Another thing to be the head coach and pull a guy aside and say, get your ass in gear. Big difference. And you can't always assume that the guy who's good at one thing is good at the other thing. Because I can tell you, especially when it comes to baseball managers, there are guys managing right now that there is no way in hell as a player you thought there'd be, they'd have a chance of being a manager coach. Eric Hinsky is apparently a candidate for the Blue Jays hitting coach's job. I like Eric Hinsky. The Cubs players seem to like what Eric Hinsky did. If you had asked me in Eric Hinsky's rookie year, that this, if you'd said, hey, Jeff, Eric Hinsky'd make a great coach, I go, are you off your rocker? So you've got to be careful when you automatically assume one thing about a guy who's a coach, that it's going to carry over to being the guy. But having said that, especially in the case of Horacek and Spot, you're dealing with guys who have been head coaches before. And everything we hear about those two suggests that they possibly could be. My gut feeling, I'll tell you this right now. If Randy Carlisle's fired midseason, I think Horacek's the head coach. It's my gut. That's my gut feeling right now. Alan and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Alan?
Yes, good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good morning.
I just wanted to say, you know, I mean, the line juggling is good. It worked for a night. But you know who I missed that the Leafs got rid of? Is Clark MacArthur. I don't understand why they let that guy go. He would have been the perfect guy to spark that second line. I really like that guy, and you can see what he's bringing in Ottawa. That's one point I wanted to make. But the other point is, I want to say that the part of the problem in this city is the media, with all due respect to you, of course. But, I mean, something goes wrong. We're 9 games into a season, and already we're calling for Randy Carlisle's head. Like, I mean, why don't we have a little bit more patience? Why don't we have a little bit more respect for and get behind the guy a little bit and see that he is a good coach? I mean, we can't keep bringing good people in here and rushing them out. Like,
yeah, but Alan, he's a good coach. I agree. He's won a Stanley Cup. He may not be the right coach for this team. That's possible. That doesn't mean that Randy Carlisle's a bat. Far from it. It just means that he's not the right coach for this team.
Well, you know what? I think it's on the players. When I hear things like the players are not responding, I don't buy that. You know, Scotty Bowman wasn't the easiest guy to play with. I heard that there's a lot of people out there who hated playing for him.
Oh, my God, yes, absolutely.
He got the job done. The players got the job done. That's the bottom line. These guys are professionals. If he's teaching something and he knows what he's talking about, it's up to the players to buy in. If they're not buying in, there's something wrong there. It's not the coach.
Alan, I will say this, and I'll explain why coaches, not just Randy Carlisle, but why coaches are so often easy targets for the media. And the simplest explanation is it's one guy. The guy's the figurehead. It is, unfortunately, part of the coach's job to take all the blows when things don't go well. In this city, we haven't had a lot of success, whether it's since 93 in baseball, with the Leafs since whenever. We haven't had a lot of success. And what happens when you are in a city where there isn't a lot of success? After a while, it gets tiring crapping on the players, because it's been since 67. It's a lot of players have gone through here. When a team doesn't have a lot of success, it's easy for the fans to look, and the media, certainly don't mean to exclude the media, and I'm part of it. It's easy for us to look at the easy target, and the easy target is the head coach. There's a vacuum that's created when you don't have success. It's a vacuum of blame. And after a while, you just, it's pointless to blame the players, because the players are always going to be there. So it becomes easier to blame the coach. And in this case, it's not so much blaming the coach as it is we're all waiting for him to be fired, because the guy above him, David Nonis, doesn't have a great deal of job security. At least there's no indication he does. He's surrounded by new assistant coaches that he didn't pick. He's got Brendan Shanahan calling the shots. Brendan Shanahan didn't pick him. So the focus is on Randy Carlisle this year, not just because of the results, not just because of the way the team's playing, but because the narrative seems to be set up to suggest that Randy Carlisle is going to be fired. And that's what happens when you have a vacuum, when there's not a lot of success to talk about, when there's not a lot of stars to talk about, when there isn't that transcendent personality to talk about. Attention generally starts focusing on the general manager and the coach. And that's not always right, but it's, I think, pretty easy to understand. Game 7 of the World Series will go tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And at Sportsnet Ontario, Tim Hudson on the mound for the Giants, Jeremy Guthrie for the Royals, but that's irrelevant. Everybody is on the mound for the Giants tonight, and everybody is on the mound for the Royals. This is it. There's no tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. Cliff Floyd of the MLB Network will join us to talk about playing in a Game 7. Barry Davis will join us from Kansas City, and, well, we'll take your calls. It's a one-game shot tonight. Who you got, and who's going to be your World Series MVP? This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.